It's great to be together to see everyone today. And the good singing is always uplifting, and good scripture reading. I want to thank David for that. And the words of Bruce at the Lord's table, they're very uplifting. So it's great to see everyone. Thank you for all being here today. And in Proverbs chapter 22, I want us to look at and think about what the writer Solomon has said here, that a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver or gold. And he says that a good name is to be chosen. And when we read that, at first, we wonder about that because for us, our name is been chosen. When we are born, our parents choose those names, and they often look for a good name, you know, for each one of us. And you have a family name, you have a first name that is given, some have a middle name. And today, we see a lot of interest in names that parents going, you know, trying to find just the right name for their child. And a lot of interesting names, like for girls today, names like Brooklyn and Aurora and, Amelia and Harper and Isabella and Camilla and all these different names like that. And boys' names like Logan and Mason and Ethan and Sebastian and Alexander and on we can go. That there's a lot of interest in the name that the parents pick out for their son or daughter. And yet, Solomon is saying here something different than that, I believe, because he's saying that a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. So there is a choice that each one of us makes as we grow up in life. We make a choice. We have the opportunity to make a choice to have a good name. And I believe that is talking about more than just the actual name that you have. It's talking about the reputation that you have and how people think about you. What the opinion is that people have of you as a person. And you have a choice about that we can have our goals centered around riches and silver and gold and things like that. Or we can make a choice. I want to have a good name. I want my life to be respected. I want to have live the kind of life and be the kind of person that people will, when they hear my name or your name, they will think of it in a way that represents the person that you are, and you have a good name in the community or among those who know you. And that is something that he says is very, very valuable. I mean, when you think about riches and silver and gold, those represent the height of riches as we know them. And yet he is saying that this is more important than that. That having a good name exceeds even great riches as far as its value is concerned to you for your life. And so I think we can appreciate that. We can understand that. Because a lot of people form an opinion of each one of us. And we need to give consideration to what our reputation is. And it's important that we have a good reputation. So we want to consider this morning how we form a reputation. How do you develop that? And what is your reputation based on? How concerned should we be about the reputation we have? And what does the Bible say? Let's take a look at what does the Bible say about having a good name and having a good reputation. So there are some questions that we need to address and think about as far as that is concerned. Should we be concerned what non-believers, non-Christians, should we be concerned at all? What do they think of us? What do they think of you and I, the unbelievers here that we live among? And what about our fellow Christians? Should we be concerned about what they think of us or of you as a person? And ultimately, we all need to be concerned about what the Lord thinks of us. So is it possible that the Lord's opinion of us might be different than what non-Christians think of us, and even Christians think about us? Does it matter, though, what people think about us? Whose opinion should we be concerned about? And why do we sometimes go all out to impress certain people? Is it more important what Christians think about us, or our friends, what they think about us, or other people who are out there that we don't necessarily know? So all of these questions, I think, are important for us to think about as far as what is our name? Do we have a good name? Do you have a good name? Because Solomon says that we ought to strive to have a good name in these areas here. So first of all, let's think about what do non-believers think about us in the community. What do they really think about us as Christians? And I think it would be possible for us to think that, well, these people don't even believe in the basic truths of the Bible. So what difference does it make what non-Christians think about us? They're not concerned about living a Christian life themselves. So why should I be concerned about what they think of me? Well, let me think about that for a moment, because Jesus said in Matthew 5 and verse 16, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." And so it's important. The Lord wants us to let our light shine. It's important what those people out here, these people that live around us, our neighbors, people that we work with, what they think about us, because to a certain extent, what they think about us is going to end up being what they think about the Lord and about His church. And if we are not presenting ourselves well among them, then how do we possibly think we are going to convert them to Christ if they do not have a good impression of you or I, and we do not have a good name, or they do not think well of us as people, as individuals? If we are behaving poorly among them and we have a bad reputation, then how is that going to impact our ability to be able to teach them the gospel of Christ? There's an old song that we sometimes, I think, have sung, but it says, "We are the only Bible that the sinful world will read." And so we need to set a good example. We need to be setting a good example in front of non-Christians that we come in contact with, because they are not going to pick up the Bible, many of them. And what they know about Christianity comes from, at least initially, it comes from what they see in us. That's the impression for many of them about what a Christian is. If they look at us and they see something that is a negative thing in our life that turns them away, then they think, well, if he is supposed to be a Christian, then I don't want anything to do with it. And we don't want to have that impact upon people that we know and that we come in contact with. So I believe there are several passages in the Bible where the opinion of unbelievers does matter, what they think of us. One of them that I think is very interesting is in 1 Timothy 3, where Paul is talking about the qualifications of elders, and he speaks about the various qualifications in order to become an elder or a bishop. He said that a bishop must be blameless, the husband of one wife, of good behavior. And he goes on down through these qualifications, and he comes to verse 7, and he said, moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Well, when it says those who are outside, that's talking about non-Christians. And it's interesting that in order to be an elder in the church, that a man has to have a good testimony among those who are outside the church. When you think about that, it kind of is implying from that what non-Christians think about us sometimes may be more accurate than what Christians think about us. Because we come to church and see one another on a limited basis. We see each other 2-3 hours a week. And when we come together, we are on our best behavior. And so we make comments in Bible study and we lead prayer. And so we come across to one another in a way while we are here that is only that may not be completely the way we are in other times of our life, but those people that we see daily, many of them non-Christians, they we go to work with, like Bruce is saying, you know, driving up to Everett every day and working with those people up there. Those people in some ways might know Bruce better than we do. So it's important that an elder, he is saying, has to have a good reputation of those who are outside the church in order to be able to lead the church. That, to me, is saying that it is more important than we might think at first what the opinion of non-Christians is of us as a Christian. And we might think, well, I really don't care. It doesn't matter what they think. They're not a Christian. But they know us and they see us. Sometimes they know us better than people. It's easy to maintain your good behavior when we come together. But the guy that sees us on the job every day, or the neighbor who sees us working out in the yard, Or the person that we run into at the store, they may have a better insight into the kind of real person that we are than even our own brothers and sisters sometimes might be. So it is important. And in Titus chapter 2 and verse 6, he said here, speaking to Titus, likewise exhort the young men to be sober-minded in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works. In doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. Now think about this, that here is a person who is not a Christian, and he's talking to young men here, teaching young men how important it is for you to have a godly character in your life. When you go out here in the community, when you're around non-Christians, that your life needs to be a pattern of good works, and your speech and things about your life, it needs to be a godly character and a godly lifestyle that you set forth and present yourself among other people, so that the one who is of the contrary part may be ashamed to have nothing evil to say of you. Because here's a person, in other words, that might be looking for something to be critical of Christianity. They are an opponent. They don't believe in Christianity. And they are looking to find if there is something about you that they can use, but they cannot find anything. See how important that is, that a Christian has a good name among the non-Christian community. To let our light shine, to let people see what a Christian is. And that they may not be a Christian, they may not be convinced of wanting to be a Christian, but when they see your life, and they see that you are a person that is very sincere, and you practice your faith, and you're not a hypocrite about that, then that goes in, and it is a good testimony that you can have with those individuals. But now, is there a limitation of how far we should be concerned about what non-Christians think of us? Is there a limit to that? And I believe the answer is yes, that we should be concerned what they believe, and we should do our best to live a godly example. But we should not ever compromise the truth when it is around non-Christians. Let them know that we are living a sincere moral life, that we strive to follow Jesus Christ, and we're not ashamed to be known as a Christian. But we do not seek the favor and the approval of men to the extent that we want to be like them. We try to fit in step with them and do everything that they will, that will be on their good side in everything that we do. Because then we would be compromising the faith, compromising the gospel. Peter and John, they spoke up in the temple when they were told not to be preaching the resurrection of Jesus. And they said, whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you more than to God, you judge. And they went on to say in Acts chapter 5, he said, we ought to obey God rather than men. So here they were in the city of Jerusalem, and the non-Christian there were the Jewish people. And they wanted to have a good impression with them, obviously, to hopefully convert many of them. But they would not compromise the truth. They said, well, stop preaching Jesus is raised from the dead. We don't want to hear that. They said, no, we can't stop preaching that. And we have to draw the line that way about the reputation that we have, the good name that we have. And I think sometimes Christians fail to see that. Sometimes Christians want to go so far out to have the good favor of non-Christians that they do compromise their faith. They want to be in good with non-Christians. And maybe in the way we dress. And I've heard people make statements and say, well, we don't want to be different from the people out there. We want to blend in. Well, blend in with what? Blend in with what? Out in the world. Some parents I've heard say things like this. They said, I don't want my kids to be different. Well, think about that. Do you want your kids to be like all the other kids that are out there? Do you want them to be doing all the things that the other kids are doing? Have you paid attention to what the other kids are doing? And to say, I don't want my kids to be different. As a matter of fact, I think we do want our kids to be different. I want my children to be different. I want my children to be, my grandchildren to be different. That not like the worldly people that are out there. So there's a point at which we want to live so that there will be a good name. you'll have a good reputation, but don't compromise the faith in doing that. Well, what about what fellow Christians think of us? How important is it what fellow Christians think? You know, it seems that some Christians today are not aware. They seem to be almost oblivious to the fact that other Christians are forming an opinion of us. And some act like they don't really care. Yeah, I really don't care what the people in the church think about me. I want to do what I want to do. I'm my own person. And so those people who have an attitude like that usually are the ones who stir up trouble within the church. They have a chip on their shoulder. They have something that they don't care what people in the church think about them. Whenever we look at Acts chapter 16, we see a good example here of young man Timothy. And I'd like you to think about young Timothy, what the Bible says about him here. Paul, on his journey, second journey, came to Derbe and Lystra, said where a disciple named Timothy lived, whose mother was Jewish and a believer, but whose father was Greek. The believers at Lystra and Iconium spoke well of him. Paul wanted to take him along on the journey, so he circumcised him because of the way the Jews who lived in that area, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. Timothy was a young man here. We don't know the age of Timothy, maybe as a teenager or maybe in his early 20s, something like that, a young man. But when Paul came, the brethren, the believers at Lystra and Iconium, these two congregations, these two cities, knew him and said what a fine young man he was. They said this to Paul. Paul, if you are needing a young man to go with you on your journeys, we would like to recommend for you Timothy. He is such a great young man. We all love him. We all respect him. We all admire him. Well, how did he come to have that reputation among the Christians? How did Timothy come to have such a good report among the brethren? It was because of his life that he was living up to this time. He was a faithful Christian. He was a young man that was a good example, and he was very zealous and very interested and very sincere in his life, and the brethren respected him. And that is not something that comes about accidentally. That's not something that Timothy would have had by just coming in and sitting on the back seat now and then. He had to be involved. He had to be a very dedicated young man in his life and living a godly life. He cared about people. He was a young man that his life had an impact upon other people. And it was a good thing. So, yes, I believe it is important. What do fellow Christians think of us? What is their opinion? What is the reputation that I have? And when we go to Romans chapter 1 and verse 8, Paul was writing here about the congregation, the whole church. So we see it's possible for a congregation to have a reputation among the area of other Christians. They know this congregation in a certain way, and it has a good reputation. He said, first, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for all of you, because your faith is being reported all over the world. Well, imagine what a good reputation that would be for a congregation like Rome at this time, that their faith was known throughout the whole world. How did that happen? They were dedicated. They were true believers. They were standing faithful for Christ. Now, on Corinth, on the other hand, when Paul wrote the letter to Corinth, he said, "My brothers and sisters, some from Chloe's household have informed me that there are quarrels among you." Now, they had a different reputation, even at this time, that people were talking about the church in Corinth, and they were saying that they have divisions. They have problems in that congregation. So there was a totally different reputation from one to the other. And I believe that we can show from these and other examples that the Bible says that we should be concerned about what our reputation is with one another and with other Christians. And how do you come to have a good reputation among fellow Christians? By being committed, by being dependable, by being someone that you can count on. People can count on you. They know that you're going to be here. They know that you want to be involved. They know that you care about people. They know that you're striving to be a faithful Christian in your life. You take it serious. You want to be the best you can be for the Lord. That's how they have a good reputation. Is there a limitation on how far we should be concerned about the reputation among Christians? Well, yes, because the same thing. That we should not ever compromise the faith. We should never seek to win people, please people, rather than pleasing God. He said in writing to the Thessalonians in chapter 2 and verse 3, he said, "For the appeal we make does not spring from error or impure motives, nor are we trying to trick you. On the contrary, we speak as those approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel." We're not trying to please people, but God who tests our hearts. So Paul is saying here that he doesn't try to please people in his life. We should not do that. We should not be a people pleaser in that way. Try to please God. And live your life. Let people see that I'm trying to do what God says, wants me to be. And therefore, the way that I conduct my life, I'm trying to please God. And when we go out of the way to try to please people, we end up compromising. We put that ahead of God. And it's not a good thing for us to be that way. Now, what does the Lord think of us? What does the Lord think? That needs to be our primary concern in our life. As important as it is to have a good name with our neighbors and friends and with our brethren, it is most important that what does the Lord think of us? What is His opinion? What is His judgment? Well, Paul, in writing to the Corinthians once again, he made the statement here in chapter 4. He said, "I care very little if I am judged by you or by any human court. Indeed, I do not even judge myself. My conscience is clear, but that does not make me innocent. It is the Lord who judges me." Well, what is he saying? He's saying that what it is very little importance to him to be judged by them. What matters to him is what is God's judgment? What is God's judgment of his life? How he is serving God is more important ultimately in the final outcome than what the brethren thought of him there in Corinth. He was trying to do the right thing. He was trying to preach the truth, to be a faithful Christian, an example for them. But some of them were putting him, they were judging him in a certain way. He said, that's okay, that doesn't matter. I'm not worried about that. So there's more important for us to be concerned about what does the Lord think. In Revelation 20 and verse 12, he said, "And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and the books were open, and another book was open, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which are written in the books." Well, it's interesting and I think frightening to think that God is keeping a book of each one of us, of our lives. And it's also known as the book of life. But it's a book that he says has the works that we have done in that. And I picture it that it has everything in your life. God has an accurate record, a complete record. Now, of course, the things that we have done that are wrong can be forgiven. God is willing for them to be forgiven. If we confess them, if we repent of them, take them to God, God will cleanse them. He will wipe them clean. But nevertheless, there's a record that God is keeping. God is keeping track of what we're doing, what each one of us is doing. Now, how can what God thinks of me differ from what the people of the world, or even my fellow Christians, think of me? The people of the world can have an opinion of me, one thing over here, and they may think I'm a kook. They may think I'm a total oddball. Always one of those guys that, you know, believes that Jesus died and rose from the dead and all this crazy stuff. And so they may think of us one thing. And Christians over here, they may think, well, he's really a good guy. But all of that is fine as long as what does God think of me? That's what really matters. Even if fellow Christians may think badly of me, or they may think good of me, the important thing is what does God think of me? God knows each of us completely, and there's no mistake about His judgment. It's interesting to me sometimes when you're watching the news, and some of you probably have seen this also, that one of these mass murders happens, right? We see that on TV. And then they go and they interview the people in the neighborhood, next door neighbors, people that they went to church with. And they'll say, well, he was such a nice person. You know, we never saw anything like that. You know, I would have never pictured him doing something that way. And then he goes out and he commits one of these terrible crimes. Well, what does that say? They did not really know who he was. He had deceived that in people. They did not see that coming. That's why people's opinion of us, as good as it might be, as important as we would like for it to be good, it may be totally mistaken. It may not be accurate. God is the one that we need to be concerned. It's His opinion is a major thing. What people think is a minor thing in comparison with that. So how is our reputation formed with God? We start with God. How is our reputation formed with God? And work on down from there. Our reputation with God is formed when we are living a life of faith in God, living a sincere life, as the book of Hebrews brings out in such a beautiful way. In Hebrews chapter 11, living by faith, making it the goal of our life to live a godly life of trusting God and following and obeying Him in our life. Walking by faith. Letting God direct our steps. Listening to Him and following what He has given for us. And we see in Hebrews 11 verse 1 that faith, said, is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Verse 6, without faith it is impossible to please Him. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. And the thing that stands out as we read through in Hebrews chapter 11 to me is these people that by faith, they live by faith, at each time it will say, by faith, here's what they did. Their actions was the result of that in their life. By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice. By faith, Noah prepared an ark, the saving of his household. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. By faith, Moses chose to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin. How did those people build a reputation with God? They did it by living by faith. Trusting God, living in the world of their day. And they stood out because they believed in God. They lived by faith. They weren't trying to fit in. They weren't trying to be what everybody would like them to be. They wanted to be what God wanted them to be. So how do we build a good reputation with God? We do it the same way. We live by faith in our world. We put pleasing God, number one, above everything else. And I believe that's why the book of Proverbs says what it does. It says, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. We have to make a choice. We want to have a good name, or do we want to have the things of this world that it has to offer? We have to choose by faith. And that leads to our character and who we are. Your character is who you are. Your reputation is what people think you are. It is who they believe you are. People say, well, this is who he is as far as we know. He's a good person. He's a nice guy. That's your reputation. That's what they put on your tombstone. But your character, that's what the angels of God are going to say before the throne of God. That's what counts. It's not what's on your tombstone. It's not your image that you are carefully constructing in front of the eyes of people that they will think well of you. It's the life you're living before God that ultimately matters. So let your light shine before men, that they may see your good works, that they may glorify your Father who's in heaven. Always let your life be living in a way that, whether people like it or not, they will say one thing about you, well, he's definitely a Christian. He definitely believes in God. And they may not be convinced of that in their own life. Be like Timothy, a young man that the Christians, they look at you and they say, well, if you're looking for someone to go with you, Paul, you're not going to find a better one than Timothy here. He's the finest young man we know. And if someone is looking to be an elder, they say, well, he has a good reputation in the community. The people know him because the people that work with him, the people that they know the kind of person he is. He's honest. He's trustworthy. He tells the truth. Even among non-Christians, we'll see that. Our good works and glorify God. But ultimately, when we stand before God, God is the one that is written in the books. What is his reputation? What is his opinion? That's the one that counts. If you're here this morning, we're going to stand and sing the invitation song. And if there are any who need to come forward this morning and render obedience to the gospel of Jesus or to seek the prayers of the church on your behalf, we would be happy to assist you. And we invite you to come as we stand together and sing.